Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Come fly with me. Let's fly away.
It's the first time in a while we've been treated to a public, critical head-to-head dispute. Regarding the Broadway dance musical Come Fly Away, Charles Isherwood of the New York Times said the show sweeps you up in a spell. He called it dazzling. Alexander McCauley, on the other hand, also of the Times, found the show shallow, noting that the choreography is overwrought and that it recycles known effects rather than charts fresh emotions. The two critics blogged further in a gentlemanly argument about the role of the critic and the nature of popular taste. It's just a fact that such disputes used to be more commonplace. Critics of an authoritative nature were a bigger part of public cultural life. Certainly in the theater, that was true. They were sometimes even part of the playwriting process, remembers veteran Broadway producer Manny Eisenberg.
When I first started producing Neil Simon's plays, The Sunshine Boys, we met with the critic that night after the opening. He'd write his review, then we'd meet at 1 o'clock. We hadn't read the review, and we'd discuss the play. So there was a strange participation. Distanced, nobody had dinner, but it was professional, and it was helpful.
If critics could be helpful, they could also be mean. The image of the critic was of an acidly witty, rather antisocial character, embodied in the film All About Eve, for example, by Addison DeWitt.
We're a breed apart from the rest of humanity, we theater folk. We are the original displaced personalities.
Said to have been fashioned after the famously acerbic critic George Jean Nathan.
I don't agree, Addison.
That happens to be your particular abnormality.
Movie critics may not have had quite the same haughty profile, but they had passion and influence, especially in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, observes Philip Lopate, author of the anthology American Movie Critics. He points out that the heyday of writing about movies arose at a rich cultural moment.
The big game was fiction, but a lot of people were writing extraordinary nonfiction. So you had, you know, people like, obviously, Edmund Wilson and Lionel Trilling and Harold Rosenberg and Clement Greenberg and Art, and you had Robert Warshaw and James Agee and Manny Farber in film criticism, and later Pauline Kael and Andrew Saris, John Simon.
Actually, John Simon was, and probably still is, a little Addison DeWitt-like in his approach. In his regular writing for a 36-year stretch at New York Magazine, Simon wrote from high above the fray and talked from the same place, as in this interview with Patricia Marx from the 1960s. Marx brought up Simon's dislike of the films of Jean-Luc Godard.
Briefly, Godard is a man with talent, but with a minor talent and a major arrogance. And his kind of filmmaking consists of slapping things together. He's a kind of spoiled, indulged child, enfant terrible, of filmmaking, who has been indulged and cosseted by the coteries.
Simon's film and theater reviews in the period often stung with personal insults, and they inspired many forms of retaliation, most notably that of the actress Sylvia Miles, once a victim of Simon's harshly unflattering prose. Miles went to dinner one night in the fall of 1973, saw Simon in the same restaurant, and overturned her dinner plate on his head. Ah, those were the days.
You come to a man like Chaplin, and the question is...
A more beneficent sort was the culture critic Gilbert Seldes. He's often considered one of the first modern critics, certainly the first to embrace popular culture. He wrote about commercials and radio and TV and movies, which he addressed weekly on radio in the 1950s.
The best of Chaplin's films is next to the last so far, namely Monsieur Verdoux. But I would not certainly put that on a list of the greatest films of all time because it's so untypical. I think I'd probably fall back on something like City Lights.
Each week, Seldes spoke alone, a friendly lecture. But later on TV, the use of two critics, Siskel and Ebert, in At the Movies was even friendlier.
And frankly, he was so pumped up, and the music was so pumped up at such a high level.
It worked for me.
Well, then you're easy, because for me, I thought, oh, come on.
It mirrored the way we respond to movies. We want to talk about them and compare notes with friends. That was the appeal of that show, the sense that you could be smart about movies without necessarily having some kind of right answer. You could compare notes and disagree and still come back the next week for more. How did we get from Gilbert Seldes and John Simon to At the Movies? I guess the same way we got from Charlie Chaplin to James Cameron. And speaking of James Cameron, he was responsible for one of the best critic stories ever. When Titanic was released in 1997, the L.A. Times critic Kenneth Turan wrote his now-famous review. The headline was, "Titanic Sinks Again, Spectacularly." Turan closed his piece by suggesting that, and I quote, "As Cameron sails his lonely craft toward greatness, he should realize he needs to bring a passenger with him, preferably someone who can write."
And the director, Cameron, said, "Fire this critic because he's so out of step with the readers who have made it the most popular film ever made." And Turan said rather wittily, "Well, you know, if I were a restaurant critic, I wouldn't recommend that people should take their special date to McDonald's just because more people eat McDonald's than any other kind of food." So popular support of something doesn't mean everything. We still have to look at the film and judge its strengths and weaknesses.
That's the funny thing about film critics. They never really have had the kind of commercial power the theater critics have. The film critics have had intellectual power. Maybe that's at the heart of this moment's crisis of film criticism, admitting that it is all about ideas and not at all about the marketplace. So then the question becomes how to support it, because it is unthinkable to be without it.
I think as long as intriguing and stimulating and complicated movies are being made, somebody's going to want to think about their virtues and their defects.
The question is whether those somebodies will be people we care to listen to. Criticism is no fun unless there's a little of the us and them about it. Don't be so friendly. I say give me a taste of Addison DeWitt in my critical cocktail, please.
You have a point. An idiotic one, but a point.
For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishkoe.